today's National Cat Day.
It's National Cat Day.
It is.
You gotta put your cat on Facebook now.
I'm not on Facebook, but
Instagram.
But there's my cat.
Oh, it's cute.
Yeah, when she was a kitten.
Oh, it's cute.
Yeah, she's my baby.
You all ready?
Yeah.
Yeah, recorders are on.
I started right National Cat Day.
It's on your mind.
Are we on?
Yeah.
We are? It's October 29th, 2019. This is negotiations at the University of Central Florida between the University of Central Florida Board of Trustees and the United Faculty of Florida chapter at the University of Central Florida. I'm Mike Matamore. Do we introduce ourselves?
No.
Oh, then forget about that.
I mean, we've only been doing this 17 years. We know each other by now.
I know. You know, it's funny. Some places that record require everybody to say their name. And I don't know which one I'm at. One of the ones that require your identification. Okay, then.
So there were actually three negotiating proposals. So the number one was the 1.25%, which we passed out.
Okay.
The number two was the 1,000 across the board, and it was passed out. Number three was the very last one that we left with, and it was not passed out.
But it was informal.
It was informal. Yeah, 500 ATV, get back on Monday about it. Did you need a physical copy of it? Or
no.
No? Okay, great. So that was the only one that there was.
So do we? What change would you like to make to the minutes?
Do you have to distribute it or discuss?
Well, I don't think we need to make any change. It's just a question of we're all in agreement that where we're at, the last proposal is on 1,000 across the board.
Okay.
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 Just a quick question about the ethics training. So did they agree, disagree to extending the date?
No, I mean, they're not going to extend it past the 22nd. As of 2 weeks ago, 90% of your bargaining had already completed it.
So
guessing by now, you're up to probably close to 95%. So they were not willing to extend to the end of the semester for a handful of people. They figured it couldn't have been that big a hardship if that many people had managed to complete it. But it's still open till the 22nd of November. That offer is still on the table.
So you're ready? You can give us something today, or do you want
to? We can give you 17 today.
Mm-hmm, okay.
Thank you. Do you need another one?
Do you have any?
We have John. John, if you take me, can you give me one back?
Sure.
Thank you. Are we ready for 17?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. This is our proposal number 2 for Article 17. It was, I thought, very helpful to have the discussion that we had. I guess it's two sessions that go now. And to talk about this article. There was a lot of discussion, really, about the section on what had been called compulsory leave. The biggest change that we're proposing on this version is to change the name of that from compulsory leave to recovery leave. And we think that better describes what we all want to see happen for someone who's not fit for duty at a particular time, that they would have an opportunity to recover and return to where they were before. This also, unlike the last version that we sent you or shared with you in the session, this has the new numbering that we're proposing. We had said last time that we were going to resequence things and so on, and that some of the points under what is section 17.1 have been subordinated. Those are now listed as A through E. So this is more complete in terms of what we had talked about last time with the renumbering and so on. So I'd like to really focus our attention this morning on section 17.10, which we are suggesting would be the section on recovery leave rather than compulsory leave. And to give you a key to understand how all the different colors on here, the changes in red, I believe, are changes that were proposed last time when we were here. I went through and made some additional changes based on the comments that have taken place at our session. Those are highlighted in green. And Sarah has also gone through this and proposed in purple some of the language that we think better represents what we need to do with regard to ADA and FMLA and so forth. So I would again suggest to you that the biggest change that we are proposing is this idea of recovery leave for employees that are not fit for duty at a particular time. One of the things that we've done under 17.10A now, we're placing employees on recovery leave. We're distinguishing between the case where this is an employee initiated. I went to a doctor, I found out I need to take some time off to take care of this medical issue, or I was hurt in an accident, whatever the case may be, but the employee initiates it. Here's my medical certification that I got. And we're distinguishing that from 17.10A2, which is an employer initiated, where we think that it may be the case that an employee isn't completely fit for duty, and we want to make sure that employee gets taken care of. And as we suggested last time, what we would do first under those conditions, is if the immediate supervisor and the dean or vice president, so there's two levels that say we reasonably believe there's an issue here. Somebody needs to get this checked out. And the first thing that would happen if we had that belief expressed by the immediate supervisor and the appropriate dean or vice president, we put the employee on paid administrative leave, just as we had described last time, in order to get checked out by a healthcare professional, checked out for fitness for duty. And then most of the rest of that section is the same as what we had before. Sarah's added a few words that show up in purple in those changes. We also, at the end of this particular subsection under item D, we also wanted to add that what happens if the fitness for duty examination establishes that the employee is able to perform their work duty. We want to say otherwise the employee's paid administrative leave shall end and the employee shall return to their assigned duties to the extent possible. So we didn't want to leave that unknown in what happens. I also want to point out to you a change on D that I think we believe is very significant. The way this was worded last time, it said if the medical examination confirms that the employee is unable, that's not the purpose of that exam. There's somebody that may believe that an employee is having trouble completing their normal duties. We now want to say if the fitness for duty examination establishes that the employee is unable. And the purpose of this medical examination is not to confirm an observation by a supervisor and a dean or vice president, but rather let's figure out what is the situation. We want to establish whether the person is able to perform those duties or not. And then under 1710B, these are the conditions of recovery leave. And they're very, very similar to what we had last time. Sarah has inserted a little bit of additional language for clarity with regard to things like FMLA and ADA. So again, we would like to thank you for the discussion that we had last time. I thought there were a lot of good points that were raised, and we have tried to respond to those, and this is what we're proposing to you now. Sarah, is there anything you wanted to add?
No, I can also appreciate the discussion from last time. Helped me to think about this and how we could do it in the legal framework of the laws that already are in protection for our employees and place obligations on the university, that being the ADA and the FMLA. So I know there was some concern about this potentially, the process being abused. That, I think, is captured, the protections under those laws, and captured here in the article, that you do have to have some objective evidence for if you perceive that someone is unable to perform the essential functions of their job, that there's multiple layers there, so you're not in a situation. I think John brought up an example from Duke where it was more of a retaliatory type of move to get someone placed on leave. Obviously, we don't want that to happen here, and I think this framework prevents something like that from happening. And, of course, with the specific terms from the FMLA and ADA added in here, the intent being that that's our general understanding of how this process will work in conjunction with those laws. And if there's any issue, concerns that the employee has, they can always refer to those laws about how the process is supposed to go and what their rights are. And conversely, what the university's rights are under those laws as well.
Can I ask a question about the with or without reasonable accommodations?
Sure.
Policy? That to me says you are unable to perform your duties with reasonable accommodations. That suggests accommodations should be provided.
So that's like the exact language from the ADA. Is like if you're a qualified individual with a disability, it means you can perform your duties with or without a reasonable accommodation. Meaning if you can perform your duties without a reasonable accommodation, then you're not disabled because you can do your duties with no accommodations. So under purposes of that law, you're not considered disabled.
Unable to perform the essential functions of your job without reasonable accommodation.
With or without?
Unable to perform the job without reasonable accommodation, like for a sex.
Right, because you would be, my understanding there is that if you are unable to perform your job with or without a reasonable accommodation, that at that point you're not a qualified individual with a disability.
Or
so
have a disability and require a reasonable accommodation to be able to perform a job.
Yes, if you have a disability, you are entitled to a reasonable accommodation
so
to perform your job.
Even with a reasonable accommodation being applied, you could still be relieved.
Yeah, it does. I think it's just, but I see what you're saying, Mason. It's a long sentence.
Okay.
And so when you start taking out all the prepositional phrases and you'll slow it down, you'll see what Mason's talking
okay.
about.
Okay.
If the employee is unable to perform the job without a reasonable accommodation, then we can get rid of it. Mm-hmm. And that clause to me says that should go against the ADA. If they can't perform the job without a reasonable accommodation, then that reasonable accommodation should be accommodated.
Right, that I added the sentence that recovery leave should not be used in lieu of a reasonable accommodation if one is available to make that clear, that you should always default to the interactive process and try and find a reasonable accommodation where one is available. If a reasonable accommodation is not available, then you could consider recovery leave. So this was just to supplement the employee's right to go through OIE and get a reasonable accommodation. That's why we also included the language about contact OIE with questions about potential accommodations, because we still want that process to go forward. This is not supposed to supplant that process. This is, if that process has failed, where do we go next? Because our first desire, of course, is to accommodate and have people be able to do their jobs.
I had another question about the, on page four, well, the last page, fort line 455. So it says to may advise as appropriate. Do we have an extra copy so I can give to Rich?
Do you have any more copies? Here, take
mine. Mine is black and white.
Yeah, so it's on the last page.
Thank you very much.
There at the end. 455. So it says to contact the Florida Retirement System Disability Provisions and Application Process. Now that one is unwieldy in some ways for some people, especially if they're already suffering from some sort of issue. So that's why in our original proposal, and I have some language as well, was to contact HR Benefits and maybe have somebody walk them through. I realize that HR is very busy. this might be a major thing, but so I went online to and rabled it as well to the Florida Retirement Systems, you know, going online and stuff. And it's actually not easy. Like, you need to really be with it. Sometimes you need some, it's like those small things, right? It's like you're not used to doing it, so it takes a substantial amount of time. And if you're already pretty ill, and you really are, it would take, it's just unfair, I would think. And also, so that's why we added in our language, and I do have some about contacting HR Benefits. The other thing, too, is since there's two kind of issues here, one is the failure to complete conditions of recovery leave or inability to return to work, which are two different things in some ways. So one of them is like the person is just not doing anything, right? So I understand then at that point that you would release the employee from employment, notwithstanding any other provisions. But if the person is trying to do everything and they are very ill, we wanted to know if we could request, that's why we had added in our version that the employee, you could request the employee's resignation so that they could leave at least with some dignity and be able to still have the ability to find another job. Because it just depends on what their disability may be.
I think that's something that we would want to talk about in caucus at some point.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I would point out, an employee who realizes they may be at the end of their employment, they always have the option to resign. It doesn't have to necessarily be in the collective bargaining agreement. Any of us around the table can choose to resign today if we want to, but and I'm not doing that.
We just thought that having that language there, though, it would remind people that they can't resign.
And excuse me, I have not gone to the Florida Retirement Systems website. I'm totally unfamiliar with that. We're talking about, when we get to that point, when we get to line 455 in here, it's pretty rare that this would happen. This is going to be extremely rare. So I think this is something else that, you know, we should also take a look at.
Okay. So then contacting the HR benefits would not be
a major burden. Given how infrequently I think that line 455 will come into play, I think we'd want to think about that very carefully. But that it's not an unreasonable request, I don't think.
Okay.
Okay, so we have something for you. A deal.
Okay, what's that?
Okay.
A deal!
Yes! So thank you very much for this, for Article 17. And also, I like the idea of recovery leave. And we also had some language as well. But this is the deal. So we're willing to accept the one-time bonus of $1,000 in exchange for a couple things. One is to use our, or at least integrate some of our compulsory language that I have here, or recovery leave language. And it seems, Chuck, you can correct me, the rest of the article is mostly status quo. The way you left it.
Correct.
Yeah, so we'd be okay with status quo for the rest of Article 17 with some integration of our language into 17.10. And I'll pass this up.
Okay.
And this is, then we can all go to caucus. Could you hand me one time with the silica?
We have lots of copies of this.
Okay. Oh, I didn't know it was coming. I'm sorry.
If you have a leftover, you can slide this way, that'd be great.
Oh, sorry.
Thank you, Joe.
So the yellow, of course, that's something that we agree with, that was in Chuck's article as well. And actually, Chuck, you've added some additional language that I also liked in your version. So we realize, you know, UFF, that this is recovery leave is very inclusive of everyone. We're all going to get old. We will become diseased at some point. It's not a matter of if, but when. And like you said, recovery leave or compulsory leave is somewhat rare. And it's also much more nuanced than a severe accident or cancer, where an employee will usually take sick leave. And I'm glad, I think it's out of here and stuff, but the idea of perception is very nuanced, very gray. So I think in your version you've taken that out, the perception one, so that's good. So I don't have to go into that. And in ours, the one thing that we did want to add is in blue, lines 10 through 15, which is, so after I consulted with three doctors, a primary care doctor, a neurologist specializing in dementia, and a doctor specializing in addiction medicine, who often sees these types of cases and forms as well, about like, is the person fit to continue working? You know, we can change the language, we can make it a little bit more legalese if you need to. But the idea was to have some sort of written statement of what is being viewed, what is being seen. And the reason for it, doctors, at least three of these doctors have told me that, you know, they have HIPAA and ADA, those type of things. But they need to be able, and this would help them as well, to be able to know what are the symptoms, what are other people seeing in this person. Because especially if it's in cases of dementia or they've even seen cases where there's like MS and the person is completely unaware that their episodes and stuff are actually MS. And so perhaps the person themselves is not able to tell you, hey, this is what's going on with me. And so if UCF is able to write something that says, hey, this is what we're noticing in the symptoms. It helps to give a proper diagnosis and also reduces costs. Because I know Charlie has said multiple times that these doctor examinations cost significantly.
But also, we do provide a statement as part of the process.
Mm-hmm. So. And I think we removed confusion from the language, right, in your version.
Yes.
Because confusion was just too broad. I think in the one I had, but I think in this version it's out, right? In one of the earlier versions, the confusion was there, if the person was perceived to be confused. But I think in this version it's not here.
That's correct.
Okay. Yeah, because, I mean, initially that was just too broad.
That would probably cover some people at the table.
Yeah. I was just going to say. Mike, why are you looking straight at me? Because I'm not in my head. Every time I tell my students, it's not a real field trip unless we have to do a U-turn. It's part of the tradition.
The other thing, too, and this is more like implicit rather than explicit, is the other cultural social factors that usually someone who's asked to be on compulsory or recovery leave, the humiliation felt by the employee being asked to do these types of exams, especially if they're unaware or just confused in general, or if they are suffering from some sort of mental degradation or mental dementia, and also potential like snickers from colleagues, you know, oh, that person's on recovery leave because of this or something. But those are more implicit. They don't have to be explicit in this language, but it's something that we should be aware of. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right, I think we are
okay. Mm-hmm. So we'll look at this, you'll look at it, and we'll caucus and get back to you.
Caucus and
caucus,
conversation.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay,
come back.
Okay, we'll be right back.
We'll be back.
Oh, nice. We could actually get a couple of things off the table, and then we would just have a tea, and we might even actually get to go to Christmas break without having to think about coming back to the evening.
Yes, that's our thing, and that's what we hope.
Are we
about to go. That was
well. I don't mind if that was on the table.
Yeah,
no. That was aspirational.
This is a positive. I think that's out of vein, but try it. And if not, it means this.
Okay.
One of those really Sharpie pens. Sharpie makes them.
Oh, okay.
It's a nice pen.
You have questions?
No, we can start with what you have for us.
Okay.
Yes.
We're going to let Chuck pass it out. I think what we've attempted to do is to incorporate the ideas that you spoke to us about. Which was having individuals go to HR benefits for advice and direction in the event of a disability retirement being considered. And we also picked up language about doing a written explanation of the perceptions of the... Oh, I have one, so here.
Oh, okay.
That's okay. Chuck, do you want to talk to that?
Certainly. What we're giving you, something very similar to what you gave us, just a short summary that includes basically 17.10.
Mm-hmm.
And highlighted in yellow are the changes that we would like to bring to your attention in light of the suggestions that you made as Mr. Matimer's already indicated on line what is now 459, which said that we may advise the employee to contact HR benefits about dealing with the Florida retirement system. We think that's a good suggestion. Below that, we also indicate the employee may choose to resign at any point during the recovery leave process. That's an option. And then on lines what are now 427 to 430, there's slightly different language that we think incorporates some of the thoughts that you had about providing documentation for the health provider.
Mm-hmm. Does anyone have any questions? We did, during our caucus, we had a few questions.
Good.
So, one of the first ones, no, this is excellent, thank you. I like the integration of what we did in order to put our thoughts together to work on this recovery leave, because it is a very sensitive issue. Our questions, one of the things we discussed, and some of it has to do with logic, thanks to our philosopher on the team. And that is over here where it says with or without a reasonable accommodation.
Sorry,
391. Line 391, mm-hmm. And it's also, I think it changed to a little. Yeah, so on line 391, if we could add the word either. Either with or without reasonable accommodation. And we did go to the ADA website. If you would be amenable to that friendly change. It's also on line 406, the same thing. So where it says essential functions of his or her job, either, if we could add just that word.
Okay.
It's also on 400.
On 400? Okay.
All right. Anything else?
Yes. 408 on that one, and it's now.
Which one we're looking for?
This one.
Yeah.
It was 408 on the other one.
I was looking for that too.
Where's it?
Two. Little two. We are 408.
Is now what?
Still 408.
Oh, it's still 408. Oh, if we could remove that line, if the employee poses a direct threat to his or her safety of the others, only because the university probably has that ability to do that. We're assuming that means a Baker Act, right? And what was your thinking in that one? Where it says the employee poses a direct threat.
Oh, that comes directly from the ADA as well. Those are the two circumstances under which you can request a medical examination under the ADA.
Oh, okay.
If the employee is unable to perform the essential functions of their job, or they pose a direct threat to his or her own safety or safety of others.
Oh, okay. So that comes directly from ADA?
Yeah.
Okay.
Does it happen to be in the contract?
Well, we're concerned that if it isn't, then if that situation presents itself, we won't be able to act on it. Because someone will say that's not one of the two conditions.
That's one of the problems with putting so much of this in the contract. Because obviously, to me it's obvious what your rights are in that circumstance. Obligations are.
Well, I think that we're thinking that, you know, this recovery leave is, I mean, we've done such a great job. There's so many parts here, and it's holistic, that this kind of stood out as a, of course, there's always an avenue if someone's a threat to their own safety or someone else's to do something about it. Did we want to make that part of, like, all of the other things that are going on in this recovery involved? Mm-hmm.
Well, I know that one would think that if someone was threatening violence against someone in the workplace, that would be obvious. But I think actually under the ADA, it has kind of a more subtle application.
Yeah.
So I know an example of which this was utilized in one of my clients, and it was at a nuclear medicine floor of a hospital, and because of this person's condition, which could have been temporary, the person was spilling radioactive fluid and was actually contaminating coworkers, because she would spill it on the countertop and then somebody would put their hand in it or something like that. So we would put that person, we could remove that person from the workplace because of the threat that she was posing. But, you know, we still had to go through the process of trying to find accommodations and you know, trying to determine what it was that was causing this particular circumstance with that employee, so that if it can be remedied, they can be returned to work. But that's what I mean by threat, I think, is someone, because of an incapacity, is actually causing a workplace endangerment.
And I could think of an example, someone like a chemistry lab, for example, if they start a reaction and don't remember the chemical or something they already put it in twice or something, that would be a threat, and certainly is a safety threat, but it's not violence. And I think that's what maybe you jump to when you read that, but mm-hmm. the under the ADA, threat is a lot broader. They use an example of a not in the law itself, but in some of the guidance documents, like a crane operator, if he had a heart attack or something, that's mm-hmm. obviously a threat. But it's not him attacking anyone violently. It's him, the fact that he's in a dangerous type position.
I'm looking at the ADA, the EEOC website about the ADA right now, and it says the employer must also consider whether a risk can be eliminated or reduced to an acceptable accommodation, a reasonable accommodation.
Right.
So mm-hmm. we also need that clause there. That
well, that's in the very beginning. As to eligibility, in the very beginning, it says only people eligible for recovery leave are those who cannot be accommodated. Eligible employees are those who, due to a serious medical condition or disability, are unable to perform the essential functions of their job with or without a reasonable accommodation. So if you can perform your job with an accommodation, you are not eligible for recovery leave.
Mm-hmm.
You are eligible for a reasonable accommodation, and you should go to OIE and go through the process for getting that accommodation.
But on line 408, shouldn't it also be poses a direct threat to the safety or others that cannot be dealt with using a reasonable accommodation?
I think that would be duplicative, given that that's like a overarching statement about eligibility throughout the whole article, not specific to one.
Which line are you doing?
All right. So we'll go to the next question.
Okay.
All my points.
Is on the last one?
It's on that.
It's on that. Okay, all right, go ahead.
Just on this point, I think, Mike, you'd said too, like, there's like subtle, I'm not getting the words right, you know, it's a subtle interpretation,
yeah.
things like that. And the example is used about, you know, the chemist forgot they already added some stuff, but we got a more immediate emergency, then we need to talk about recovery leave for that situation. Because it's subtle in that, I think I was coming at it with the concern that someone reading this or an administrator reading this might not appreciate and understand the subtlety of the interpretation and see something here that they should have been really directed elsewhere. Either that it was a situation that really kind of calls for something, you know, so different than what the bulk of everything we've been trying to do here is kind of talking about. So,
mm-hmm.
right, it's that someone else reading it, how they might apply it.
The language itself is jarring to you.
You know, in the terms of some kind of medical condition, I know that that's kind of in there. I appreciate the notion we're trying to protect people.
Yeah.
And if safety's at risk, someone's safe. I appreciate that very much so. Mm-hmm. The clause, when it's isolated and I look at it, the employee poses a direct threat to his or her own safety or the safety of others. Yeah, I think you're agreeing with me that a lot of people interpret that as a very specific thing, a little bit jarring, and they're looking here in a situation that is not really what this article could be about.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Thank you for letting me make that point.
An important word in this sentence, as Rich will tell you, but coming out of the ADA, is the word direct.
Mm-hmm.
Because it has to be immediate. You know, it has to be. It can't be a generalized threat. You know, it has to be someone is directly endangered.
The way the law, ADA, defines direct threat is a significant risk to the health or safety of others that cannot be eliminated by reasonable accommodation.
So that's how that phrase is defined.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right. There's just one final question for
mm-hmm.
449.
Mm-hmm.
Is why was 8 weeks chosen? Is that also because of ADA or just something?
Is this the new version?
Yes.
Yeah, 449,
well,
yes.
But
that was there before.
We have
just
to provide
the employer has to provide 6 weeks notice to everybody of their schedule for the semester. So if they're planning the schedule, they need a couple of weeks before they have to actually hand it over to the faculty member. So if somebody's coming back that they weren't sure might be there, they would want to know that. So a little bit ahead of the time when they actually had to produce the schedule so they could fit them in if they needed to or make adjustments to the schedule.
So if the class scheduling window is 6 weeks, that kind of set the barometer there to start.
Yeah, so that they could start planning and making adjustments if they need to.
Yes, the chair don't want, several months, but I think that was the most reasonable. 2 weeks, you can move some people around.
Why don't we step outside?
Can I have a quick comment?
Yes.
Oh, yes.
Ivana, on the language that we put in, your suggested language about the written statement, this was, I didn't kind of like dedupe for the, we have put the perceived language back in there unintentionally.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So I would probably suggest that on our next version, we change it to reasonably unable to perform the essential functions of his or her job owed to serious medical condition and or disability, just to make it consistent with the rest.
Yes,
okay.
Yes, I agree with that.
Okay, so we'll take out that perceived language because I don't like that language either.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mike, can you take me through on 4.14 and thereafter about what happens to somebody and they're sent to a doctor and the doctor disagree, the whole thing about disagreement.
That process from like 4.14 through like 4.26?
Yeah, just like...
If you could, Chuck, can you do that?
I can certainly try. Let's see, 4.14.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Okay, so the health provider has been contacted, has done an evaluation of the employee, submits a medical certification to us, and it says if the university agrees to accept the employee's choice of a health care provider, the university may not require another university paid fitness for duty exam for at least 6 months. So
right.
If we agree, the employee... choice is good, we're bound by that for a period of time.
Help me here. The employee would be required to submit to a fitness. Okay, but when you said employee choice.
The university can offer to pay for an examination through the employee assistance program.
Right, yeah.
And that's one option. The employee may also say, I would prefer to choose that person myself that does the evaluation. And then...
You're skipping it. Forgive me. The employer sends somebody to a physician.
Okay.
This is the employer's selection of who the physician is initially.
No.
Okay.
No, really.
It's through EAP, so we don't select the physician, technically.
It's done by a third party.
Okay, so we are on 4.12, because the word EAP jumps out at me, so I'm able to identify 4.12. Okay, by a healthcare provider chosen and paid for by the university through the EAP provider. So when I see selection by the university through EAP, it's a little bit confusing. I mean...
Well, we contact EAP, they select it.
Well, I mean, that's cool, but it doesn't, really say that. You don't control the EAP, but
correct.
It says chosen and paid for by the university. So it's a little bit inconsistent.
So
through its provider, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but you know what I'm saying.
Does it clear it up if we move the through its EAP provider to the after chosen?
We can clear it up.
But
I have some more questions about the process.
Okay. This is more process questions, procedural. All right.
We've been hearing a lot of that lately.
Yes.
Process.
All right. So.
Okay. So however we fix that. Or by a healthcare provider chosen and paid for by the employee. So the employee
he's also accepted by it. So it either comes from the EAP or by the employee, but approved by the university.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay. And it's paid for by the employee. So there, we have one or there's two ways to get the person. Mm-hmm. And then that person submits the certification to the university. And it may or may not accept it.
Okay.
And then, this is what I was hoping somebody else would do.
Mm-hmm.
Then the university will accept it or not accept it. And if they don't accept it, what happens?
The university accepts it. I don't see anything that says the university will not accept it. If the health care provider is acceptable to the university and to the employee.
Got it.
That the medical certification is submitted and that's acceptable.
Okay.
And this says in particular, in the case where the employee has chosen the health care provider, the university cannot just say, oh, well, we don't like the result
of
that.
Mm-hmm.
That's what that says.
So what if they, when do we get to a second health care provider? Is there any way other than...
Well, we hope that there isn't a second one, that this is resolved.
Okay. All right.
I mean, if we agree to accept the...
physician.
The physician, then we're not... We're going to accept whatever they tell us.
Right. Mm-hmm. If they cannot perform the function of the job, they go on recovery leave. If they can do the job, they go back to work.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. All right, Rich. So we'll allow you to go to a brief caucus, or you're
sure.
going to start soon?
Okay. Yeah, you want us to step out. You want us to step out.
Or
do
you want us to
step
out?
Or?
Well,
no.
Well,
okay.
Why don't we let them have this to read?
Hmm?
Oh, they've already seen it, but we can look at it again. Yes.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Do you have another?
Yeah, I think they're all. I think they're all the same.
Okay.
No, they're not. These are good ones.
And then you'll come back with a clean copy of this.
Yeah,
that would be really helpful.
Okay.
Well, we appreciate the caucus. During the caucus, we revised Article 17 and picked up some of the suggested language changes that you spoke to last time we were in session. And Chuck, you want to go through them?
Thanks.
You getting tired of doing this, Chuck?
No.
We have one more thing.
I may miss some of these, but the first change I'd point out is on line 391, where we've inserted the word either with or without reasonable accommodation.
And on 400.
Yeah, it's in three places.
Yeah,
three places.
Mm-hmm. 4-6.
Mm-hmm.
And then on 412, we move that phrase to its EAP provider, as suggested.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, thank you. And hidden in the yellow highlighting is the fact that we took out that language about perceived conditions between 427 and 430. And made the language consistent with the rest of the article.
Okay.
Reasonably unable to medicate for medical?
Oh. I'm okay with it.
Mm-hmm. I'm okay. Thanks, Jess.
I'm okay. I might run back to make that.
Yeah,
change.
Yeah.
Sorry.
It is fine.
Oh, it's all going to be very reasonable.
Yes,
it's
all
right. Don't laugh so loud, you're going to wake your daughter up.
I think she's that way.
You may have all
those. Okay, and then you also know the changes for the HR benefits, and they may choose to resign. Okay,
mm-hmm.
Thank you. All right, and then the ethics team?
Yes, we have that.
Okay, so we're good. All set. So the process then is to sign, right? Is
yes.
That right now? Okay.
Yeah. So we can sign. You have a clean copy of Article 17.
Right? I happen to have two clean copies.
There you
two
go. Clean. Perfect.
Oh, Giovanna can sign.
I just want to make sure because the last communication I had was.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And, no, I'll make sure that I was
messing
that.
Thank you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to initial the pages and then sign my name on the last one.
Okay. And, all right. Mm-hmm. Oh, wait. Mm-hmm. Agree to everything in 17. The ethics. We already agreed to everything in 17. The 95% of the people. Do you want to say that one? Okay, so...
No,
we have agreed we're good. We have agreed to Article 17. We have integrated some of the changes that we've discussed over the last few months. So we agree with the Article 17, closing it as a reopener, and extending the line to November 22nd, especially now with 95% of our employees doing it. We're okay with that being November 22nd. It'll also be the same day that we receive... our one-time bonus is also on November 22nd. Okay. Thank you, guys.
I'm going to print the collective bargaining agreements. I think I'll print each one in. So
okay.
These two, I'll have them ratified. Sorry, my bad.
No. This one has to be ratified? Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
17 and
18. 17 and
18. And 23.
Yeah.
Okay, so when we end it. So it says UFF present here. So that you have to sign this one? No, doesn't matter. So initial each page. You want us to just initial each page and date it?
Yeah, or just date it at the end.
Okay.
Actually, these are the. I signed two clean versions.
Oh, okay.
So, Giovanna, if you want to do that.
Oh, I'm supposed to sign.
I think it's
difficult session. This whole idea of what are we going to be doing about people and changing this recovery thing.
Mm-hmm.
And we were able to work together collaboratively and come up with, I think, a much better article. So.
Mm-hmm. I think so too.
Thank you.
And I think we need another one. We need that signed too, so we both have an original.
Oh, don't you sign a pen? It's
I am. Every time I grab the pencil, I say, okay. I'm going to grab
so
a pen.
I always get nice pencils.
And we need a second one of these signed. Do we have the employee?
Oh, yeah. Do we have another?
We have another pen copy.
I only have one.
Oh,
okay.
John, I think
we don't want this.
Oh, yeah. Where's the party so we can? Could we just, okay, so that was one thing.
Okay.
Could you bring it up while I sign this?
Well, you've signed that copy, but before we sign
okay,
the second copy.
Okay, hold it. Before we sign the second
right.
copy, just
all right,
one
take
thing.
Your time. Yeah, take
yeah,
your time. Take your time.
Yeah, okay, we should have pointed this out.
Sure.
Yeah.
No problem.
Let's see how strongly you object to this, okay? We don't like that short paragraph whereas the parties agree that no recurring funding was there. We have no problem closing the deal in negotiations and waiving, you know, any future agreement or anything like that based on the article. But we prefer to sign this minus that.
Okay.
Paragraph.
Can I see it?
Yeah. If you would prefer some kind of revision that suggested, you know, with the spirit of we're closed with this, we're not, you know, the grievance process is closed or anything like that.
Okay.
That makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, I'm willing to eliminate that if we can say that this is closed and that you won't grieve it at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, we're in agreement.
That'd be great.
All right, can we...
Do you need to go back and...
Yeah, we'll
just give it to me, Sherry, and
I'll... Let's shred that.
Do you want me to delete the paragraph entirely?
Delete the paragraph, right.
Okay, yeah, delete the paragraph.
Do you want to write down the wording down so we all agree to it?
Yeah. That's fine.
She is.
Okay, so, all right, so you get one. You get one. And I'm going to sign with this one. Oh, and then I get to keep this.
Yeah. That way we both have an original.
Should be, it's a typo on the MOU. So we say at the top, University of Central Florida, and not just Central. Yeah, okay.
Get back to you to say that we weren't ready, but we think we're close, so we just think it's kind of a proposal for it.
Okay, so
Rabel,
we're going to keep the next meeting on the books?
Yes, definitely. So Rabel is going to present it. He wasn't able to go today because he was at a conference, but he'll be at the next meeting November 12th. He will present 18, and we may give you 18 before that meeting, so you can review it before.
Okay, that would be good.
I think that would be helpful.
All right.
We'll make
all
sure
right,
that
we'll
you... We will be discussing in the next section. That's all I was wondering.
We will be discussing. We won't need lawyers either because we have decided to go with what is with the university. but we'll have more discussion about that.
We want to make sure that she's there to answer any questions. You know that, that helps explain language. If there's something confusing, she can talk about that. We certainly don't mind having someone. We don't want to flail around and delay anything, you know.
Oh, okay.
For that reason, I would say. We also...
Good.
I don't want to interrupt your meeting.
Okay, that's wonderful, yes.
All right.
Last change.
Do you think talk about dates for...
For spring.
Yes. If we can figure out 18 next time, that would be great for December.
Yes. High five.
Okay. Nothing would make me happier than to not have to be thinking about bargaining over Christmas break.
That would be pleasant.
Or holiday break. I should say that.
We're not going to have Christmas Eve bargaining this year? Come on.
Oh, wait, last year, that's right. It was December 22nd. Oh,
it is. The year that we did the initial contract, the purple book. We actually came in on New Year's Day and bargained.
Oh, that's awful.
It was hideous.
Who was on the UFF team back then? You remember?
Both sides had
process that.
Okay.
Jim's negotiator.
No, right now.
Oh, right
now.
Okay, we're done.
Just
okay.
Phyllis,
that's the first I've heard
somebody
that story.
From the library. I can't remember if she's retired now.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, that was long time ago.
Barbara Fritchie.
Are we still recording?
I can't remember.
Yes.
Yeah.
Pause.
Yes,
we are. But
he called me. Have the story?
No, this is the first time I've heard this.
And he said, I'm not going to impasse with 23 articles. He said, so here's what we're going to do. And I was green as, I mean, I had just started working here. I mean,
what
I've been
year
here
is this?
Like
what
6 months. 2004.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Or 2003, because I think we signed it in April 2004. But he said, I'm coming down there. I'm going to corral my team, and if I'm going to, in a hotel room, if it takes me all weekend, I'm going to, you know, beat some sense into them. And you do the same thing with your team. Like, I mean, he could do that to you guys, but I didn't, you know, I'm going to beat some sense into the provost and the president. I've been on the payroll all of 6 months, so, but he said, and you pick out, you know, 4 or 5 of those things that you know, are just do or die for you, hills you're willing to die on. We'll do the same thing. We'll default to the blue book, and then we'll fight over, you know, and we'll make some, and that's what we did, basically.
Mm-hmm. So also modernizing our contract, because some of the language is so, like,
yeah,
using.
And over the years, everybody at every place has added and made changes. Each time you negotiate, you change something.
Thank you.
You know, so it's still the shell of the blue book is still there, but it's much more individualized by university than it was back then, which was the whole point, you know.
Well, I think along the way we've eliminated a lot of the language that neither side knew what it meant, so you're both afraid to touch it. Remember those days?
Yes, I do.
Like, well, I don't know what this means. Well, I don't know either. Well, let's leave it.
Yeah.
I don't know what else it's tied to.
Yeah, there was a lot of that.
We gradually got rid of that somehow.
The people negotiated it, John, for the Board of Regents. If I asked them, they go, we don't know.
It was done in the 70s, right? A lot of initially, right? Early 70s.
They would have had to physically mail things to each other.
Yeah.
I can't imagine anymore.
Can you imagine? You know, all the grievances and everything at step two went to Tallahassee.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. Because the Board of Regents was the step two people. Yeah, it was something.
Thanks. Well, I'm sure it was monolithic. Richard and I negotiate sometimes for the state, about the state. It's the same thing. It's so monolithic that if you say, can you change this word? And then you're like, if you change that word, then I have to change that word now in 11 other contracts and cover 200 other thousand people. You know, and it's...
John was going to present Article 18
Okay.
On November 12th, and we'll send you that Article 18